VOA News. I'm David Byrd. Mainland China reported 327 new coronavirus infections as of Thursday night, the lowest since January 23rd. But as Lisa Schlein reports, with worldwide infections increasing, the World Health Organization is warning nations to be prepared.
WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says this virus does not respect borders, and nations must seek to prevent cases from infiltrating their territory. At the same time, he says they must have a plan ready to care for those who are sick and for stopping the virus from infecting others.
Every country needs to be ready to detect cases early, to isolate patients, trace contacts, provide quality clinical care, prevent hospital outbreaks, and prevent community transmission.
Tedros says COVID-19 has pandemic potential, but there is still time to prevent country epidemics from developing into a global pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence convened his first meeting of the Coronavirus Task Force in Washington Thursday, one day after President Donald Trump made him the government's point person for the epidemic. Pence said the administration has one priority, protecting the American people.
The president wanted to make it clear to the American people that we're going to bring a whole-of-government approach to this. The president wanted to make it clear that what a priority this is for him and for our administration.
The vice president on Thursday brought in Debbie Birx, the administration's global AIDS coordinator and a medical doctor, to serve as his chief advisor for responding to the virus outbreak. For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. An airstrike by Syrian government forces killed 33 Turkish soldiers in northeast Syria Thursday, marking the largest death toll for Turkey in a single day since it first intervened in Syria in 2016. The governor of a province that borders Syria's Idlib region said 33 Turkish troops were killed and several others seriously wounded in the attack. The U.S. State Department expressed concern in a statement Thursday night, saying, "We stand by our NATO ally Turkey and call for an immediate end to this despicable offensive by the Assad regime, Russia, and Iranian-backed forces." The deaths were a serious escalation in the direct conflict between Turkish and Russian-backed Syrian forces that has been waged since early February. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres issued a statement late Thursday expressing what was called particular concern for the danger to civilians in the area and repeating his call for a ceasefire in Idlib. The United Nations warned Thursday that a locust outbreak in eastern Africa is continuing to spread and threatens to intensify. Reuters' David Doyle has details.
The UN's Food and Agricultural Organization representative to Kenya, Dr. Tobias Takavarasha, says it's a disaster that eclipses all others.
Much as we say drought is a threat, much as we say that floods can be a threat, but if you are trying to rank them, I think they're all threat, but desert locust situation is an unprecedented threat on food security.
A single square kilometer swarm can eat as much food in a day as 35,000 people. And the FAO warned last month that, left unchecked, the number of locusts in East Africa could explode by 500 times by June. The FAO says containing the plague will cost at least $138 million. So far, donors have pledged $52 million.
That's David Doyle of Reuters reporting. Wall Street markets continued to plunge for the sixth straight day on investor worries about the economic impact of the COVID-19 virus. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
The drubbing on financial markets stemming from coronavirus outbreak worries continued in Thursday's trading on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrials plunged 1,193 points, losing 4.4% to close at 25,763. The S&P 500 lost 137 points, or 4.4%, and the Nasdaq fell 414 points, shedding 4.6% of value. The S&P is headed to its worst week since October 2008. I'm Mike Gracia.
For more on these stories, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Friday, February 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Africa braces for the coronavirus.
This virus does not respect borders. It does not distinguish between races or ethnicities. It has no regard for a country's GDP or level of development.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is WHO Director General. East African countries struggle to contain the locust plague. Ugandan businesswomen appeal to President Museveni and Kagame to reopen their common border. Uganda's People Power Movement plans to resume public consultations next week despite police threat. And Guinea's opposition and civil society group will protest this weekend against Sunday's controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary election.
We'll have a contestation, but it will be around the whole country, not to one place, but everywhere, in the village, in the neighborhood, and everywhere.
Sidi Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party, and the World Bank normalizes relations with Somalia after 30 years. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Africa is bracing for a potential coronavirus pandemic as experts warn that health systems on the continent could be overwhelmed. Beyond its source in China, outbreaks have hit South Korea, Iran, and Italy, with cases detected in dozens of other countries. However, experts say the apparent delay in the virus reaching Africa on a large scale has given precious time to prepare. Henry Richwell reports.
At Dakar Airport in Senegal and at transport hubs across the continent, authorities are trying to detect and intercept suspected coronavirus patients. Single cases have been detected in Egypt and Algeria. The World Health Organization warned Thursday that no country can assume it is safe from the virus.
This virus does not respect borders. It does not distinguish between races or ethnicities. It has no regard for a country's GDP or level of development. The point is not only to prevent cases arriving on your shores. The point is what you do when you have cases.
Until this month, Senegal's Pasteur Institute was one of only two African research laboratories able to test for the virus.
If it is detected sooner, that will be more effective in limiting its spread.
The apparent delay in any African outbreak has given the continent time to prepare. The World Health Organization says more than half of sub-Saharan countries are now equipped with laboratories that can test for the virus.
Now individual countries are capable of testing for this completely new virus. It's not as extensive as we need it to be, and the testing that's going on in countries isn't as complete as we'd like it to be, but the fact that we've been able to stand this up in relatively short amounts of time, I think, represents progress.
It's feared that an undetected outbreak could rapidly escalate into a health crisis. Around 80% of people with coronavirus have only mild symptoms, meaning the true prevalence is likely underreported. Most fatalities have occurred in those with underlying health problems. But a pandemic in Africa would overwhelm medical facilities.
It's an issue when it comes to managing other medical problems. So that means that people with heart disease and things aren't necessarily able to visit the hospital or to get an appointment. And subsequently, we could see increased mortality from other medical problems simply because they can't access the health system.
Experts say many African nations must improve disease surveillance and operations to trace the spread of infection. They also warn that in the event of a global pandemic, the international community must be ready to step in and help countries with weaker health systems. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
As swarms of locusts rapidly multiply, a lack of supplies means East African countries are struggling to contain the plague that threatens food security for millions of people. Reuters' David Doyle reports.
In northern Kenya, the next generation of locusts has already been born. But as the plague multiplies and spreads across East Africa and the Horn of Africa, governments, hit by violence or a lack of supplies, are struggling to hold back the tide. In a region where 19 million people already go hungry, the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization representative to Kenya, Dr. Tobias Takavarasha, says it's a disaster that eclipses all others.
It is a big threat. It is the biggest threat. Much as we say drought is a threat, much as we say that floods can be a threat, but if you are trying to rank them, I think they're all threats, but desert locust situation is an unprecedented threat on food security.
A single square kilometre swarm can eat as much food in a day as 35,000 people. And the FAO warned last month that, left unchecked, the number of locusts in East Africa could explode by 500 times by June. When eggs hatch, as they have been doing recently in Kenya's Archer's Post, the young locusts, or hoppers, are earthbound for 2 weeks and are more vulnerable to spraying. But this month, Kenya, the region's wealthiest and most stable country, ran out of pesticide for about a week and a half, leaving residents and farmers to watch helplessly as the crops they count on to feed their families were devoured.
It's disturbing because we've never seen anything like this. And also when they land on vegetation, they eat everything, even the grass. If this continues, they will eat all the vegetation.
In neighbouring Uganda, the military has been deployed, hand-spraying trees in the morning before locusts take flight. Somalia, where the infestation was first reported in December, can't provide security to exterminators. Ethiopia needs 500,000 litres of pesticide for the upcoming harvest and planting season. But the country's single pesticide factory is struggling to produce its maximum 200,000 litres as foreign exchange shortages have delayed the purchase of chemicals.
The pesticides are available, but the pesticides require financial resources before they can be released.
The FAO says containing the plague will cost at least $138 million. So far, donors have pledged $52 million.
That's Reuters Doyle reporting. Yesterday, Thursday, marked exactly 1 year since the Rwandan government issued a travel advisory warning Rwandan nationals against traveling to Uganda. The move came at the climax of tensions between Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Paul Kagame of Rwanda. Ugandan businesswomen said the dispute has highly affected their businesses and families. As Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala, they are calling on both leaders to end their disagreement and open the borders.
1 year ago, before the closure of Gatuna-Katuna border, the main border crossing between Rwanda and Uganda, mother of six, Maria Akankwasa, used to earn 500,000 Uganda shillings, or some $140 of profits from her business. She says that she had also a business where she used to deal in foods like Irish potatoes, beans, maize, as well as other home items like mattresses. Today, Akankwasa says her business is almost closing because most of her clients were Rwandans that are now restricted from crossing to Uganda. Akankwasa, who is also the chairperson of Katuna Cross-Border Women Traders Association, says most women, just like her, have since seen their businesses collapse.
When they crossed the border, those who had fish, those who had the perishable things, all got spoiled. We don't have money. Our businesses have closed. We are mothers. We are parents. We are failing to pay school fees. We are failing to provide food for our families.
Another businesswoman, Mariam Babu, who conducts her businesses at Busia, a main border crossing between Kenya and Uganda, since the partial closure of the border between Uganda and Rwanda has equally affected traders across other East African member states.
We have been networking with the Katuna cooperative. As in resource goods from Kenya, we send them to Katuna by bus, and then the cooperative sells and gives us the what? Our money back. And at personal level, I also buy Afia juice from Kenya, put it on bus, taken to Katuna, chairperson sells and sends me back the what? The money, which means I have market in where? In Rwanda. But now the border is closed, I can't access that market and my business is stuck.
According to Eastern Africa Sub-Regional Support Initiative for Advancement of Women, EAC, NGO, local women traders at Gatuna, Katuna border lost over 600 million Uganda shillings or over $160,000 in perishable goods when the borders were closed. Sheila Kawamara Mishambi, who heads EAC, says the international community should intervene and ask the leaders of both states to negotiate in good faith.
the United Nations, the donor community that promotes the observance of human rights and sustainable development has equally stood at a safe distance, watching the unproductive and sham negotiations between Presidents Yoweri Kaguta Museveni and Paul Kagame, which are said to be aimed at reopening the borders.
President Museveni and Kagame met last week for the fourth time under the mediation of Angolan President João Lourenço and his Congolese counterpart Félix Tshilombo Tshisekedi to discuss ways aimed at restoring relations between the two countries. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 28th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. In Uganda, the opposition People Power Movement of parliamentarian Robert Chakulayi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, says it plans to resume public meetings next week as part of Wine's campaign for president. Spokesman Joel Senyonyi also says members of the group will defend themselves from police violence, which he says is intended to undermine Bobi Wine's campaign to unseat longtime President Yoweri Museveni in next year's general election.
Working through police has clearly shown us that they are not interested in following the law. And what happened on Monday when this was meant to resume, we first had a court case, and one of our comrades was killed, was knocked by a police truck which ran over her. And so we went to bury her. So the state is clearly showing that they want to frustrate our efforts by not only stopping our efforts to go out there and consult Ugandans. Our resolve really is that we are going to begin to defend ourselves against this brutality, against these murderers, because that's what they clearly have become. This week, of course, has been inundated with all these activities, and so we've not been able to hold our activities of foresight sessions. And so we want to begin that push again next week to see that Honorable Chagulanyi Sentamu Bobi Wine can go out there, interact with Ugandans, consulting them about his presidential aspirations, because the law provides for that.
Don't you think you could be clashing with the police if this is the stance of the People Power Movement to defend yourself? Defend yourself against whom and for what reason?
So we'll not just watch on as they're killing us like they're killing grasshoppers. No, that's not acceptable. So we are very well within the law to say that we are going to defend ourselves against these murderers, because that's what they have become.
Your lawyers have written to the Electoral Commission to meet with the police to pave way or address any concerns before the resumption of your consultation. Since you are yet to have received any information or feedback from the Electoral Commission or the police, how then do you begin your consultation?
As you have stated, we wrote to the police, we wrote to the Electoral Commission. Of course, the excuse they were giving is meant to meet first. We wrote to them asking for that meeting, but all of that is not forthcoming. And we are saying, since we have done everything the law requires us to do, we have tried to exhaust all legal avenues, we are going to find other mechanisms of reaching out to Ugandans and consult them. That's going to happen.
What is the next plan in terms of going on the resumption of the consultation, if there's a possibility that next week you could face the same situation where the police will arrest your supporters as well as yourself and Robert Chagulanyi?
Well, we don't want to let the cat out of the bag now, but you can be certain we have a plan.
Joel Senyonyi is spokesperson for Bobi Wine's People Power Movement of Uganda. You're speaking with viewers Peter Clotte from Kampala. Guinea's opposition parties and civil society groups say they plan to hold nationwide demonstrations this weekend against Sunday's controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary election that they say are intended to allow President Alpha Condé to serve an illegal third term. Local media quote a U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's Twitter post expressing concern about President Condé's plans to organize the legislative election and constitutional referendum on March 1st. Sidya Touré, leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party, says over 80% of Guineans are against the lifting of presidential term limits.
5 months ago, I told to Guinean people that the only thing Alpha Condé wants to do is to have a referendum because he won a third term. This is the only thing he wants to do. The problem around the parliamentary is just, you know, just for nothing. His own preoccupation is to have a third. No, I was not surprised.
So on Sunday, you are going on another protest or demonstration against this move?
Not in the same place. We are planning, not demonstration, I say, we'll have a protestation, but it will be around the whole country, not to one place. but everywhere, in the village, in the neighborhood, and everywhere.
Diplomats that you have met with other opposition forces say that you should have a dialogue to resolve any concern you have. Where is the status of that dialogue with the government so far?
We try to have a dialogue with the government. Alpha doesn't want no dialogue anymore. I think you hear about ECOWAS delegation is supposed to go to Conakry tomorrow with President Buhari, President Yusufu, who is actually the running president for ECOWAS, and President of Burkina Faso. Alpha refused to receive them. He just refused.
What has been the response from the people of Guinea so far about this Sunday's referendum?
We're against. Everywhere in Guinea is against. And you have the referendum, but you have electoral laws, who is a false. Main thing happening in Guinea dealing with the organization of Francophonie organization, we decide not to support the process because they was inviting the process after the audit we make on the electoral list. They was trying to work with National Commission, Electoral Commission, and they decide 3 days ago that to retire from there. Because it's not possible to keep more around 3 million people in the electoral list and they say it must not exist. So this is the main thing will happen. From now we say that the electoral list is not good, the electoral process itself is absolutely false. So we show to the international community what happening in our country is not a consultation, is not an election. The election is just capacity and somebody who wants to stay in power until he dies. This is the problem we have.
What is the opposition message to the people of Guinea ahead of Sunday's referendum?
No referendum here. We support the whole Guinean population in the struggle against this short-term mandate. And everybody hear that clearly and support our position today.
Pete. Sidya Touré is leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Conakry. The World Bank says it has normalized relations with the federal government of Somalia after 30 years. In an announcement on Thursday, the bank said the normalization will open up opportunities for Somalia to access concessional financing from the World Bank and also help attract investment that will support the country's stability and development. Somalia owes more than $5 billion to external creditors, and the country is also expected to achieve a comprehensive debt relief under the heavily indebted poor countries HIPIC initiative. Haroon Marouf spoke with World Bank country manager Hugh Riddell.
What this means in practice is for 30 years, Somalia has been outside of the international financial institution system. And normalizing relations means that the country is now in good standing with the World Bank. It means that going forward, Somalia will be able to access grant financing for poverty reduction. So for 30 years, Somalia has not had access to any of the World Bank Group's financing, not from IDA, not from the IFC for the private sector. So that is what it means. It means that the country will be able to make large investments in some of the basic needs that people have in Somalia.
I also want you to talk about exactly what did Somalia do that convinced you to take this step.
Some of the basic reforms that have taken place over the past 7 years have been increasing revenue generation, not only from Mogadishu Port, Mogadishu Airport, but also increasingly from the private sector. So that means that the government is able to generate its revenues from businesses, and those businesses are happy to pay increasing amounts of tax to the government because of the transparency that is now in the budget system. Another thing is the improved audit framework. The Auditor General is carrying out annual audits of the budget and is reporting those audits to the Parliament. Another reform is on the central bank. When we started working, the central bank was not regulating the financial sector. And there have been many laws and regulations now passed that enable the central bank to carry out its supervisory function in the financial sector of Hawala, as well as the new Somali banks that have been formed. Another reform is on the transparency of the budget, and in particular on the payroll. So, for example, the Somali National Army is now fully registered biometrically, and payments are made to soldiers directly to their bank accounts. or to their mobile phones. And this is cutting out a lot of the corruption that we used to see in the past on this very big part of the budget.
Hugh Riddell is the World Bank country manager for Somalia. He spoke with reporter Haroon Maruf of the Somali service. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with news from the UEFA Europa League on Thursday, where Nigerian forward Odion Ighalo scored his first goal for Manchester United. The 30-year-old Nigerian completed a move to Old Trafford at the end of January and is due to spend the remainder of the 2019-2020 campaign on loan at the club from Shanghai Shenhua.
It feels great, you know, because this is what I've waited long for, you know, for the last games I've played, but now it's dream come true for me. This is a team I supported from small when I was young, and playing for the team and scoring goals means a lot to me. I'm going to cherish this moment all the days of my life.
Odion Ighalo had featured off the bench against Chelsea, Club Brugge and Watford before making his first start against Club Brugge in the second leg of their last 32 Europa League contest on Thursday night. Staying with football news, the knockout stages of the continent's premier club competition, the CAF Champions League, kick off this weekend with four first-leg games scheduled over Friday and Saturday. At the Cairo International Stadium, Cairo, it will be Zamalek of Egypt locking horns with Esperance of Tunisia. Defending champions, Esperance of Tunisia have a poor record against Zamalek of Egypt ahead of their first leg. In seven clashes in various CAF competitions, the Tunis club have only won once, drawing three times and losing three of their fixtures together. Raja Casablanca will face TP Mazembe of DR Congo. The two former champions have many things in common. Both have lifted the CAF Champions League trophy more than once, five for Mazembe and three for Raja. Both went to win numerous CAF competitions and both finished the FIFA Club World Cup as runners-up. On Saturday, Al Ahly host Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, where the North Africans will be desperate for revenge after a 5-1 aggregate thrashing when the clubs met at the same stage last year. The 5-goal first-leg spanking in Pretoria, South Africa, was the heaviest single match loss sustained by the record 8-time African champions since a 6-0 defeat in the 1942 Egyptian Cup final. While at the Mohamed V Stadium in Casablanca, it will be Wydad Casablanca of Morocco who will host Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia. In boxing news, Ugandan professional boxer Shafik Kiwanuka will put his World Boxing Federation All-African Heavyweight title on the line when he comes up against Egypt's Abdullah Sami on the 29th of May. The fight will take place at the International University of East Africa Auditorium in Kasanga. Shafik Kiwanuka believes the title is for him to keep.
For me, I'm ready, I'm training harder, I'm focused with my coach, I'm working hard.
And that does it for Daybreak Africa's sports for this Friday. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a lovely weekend.
Festival season has arrived at border crossings.
Round the city, round the clock. Everybody needs you.
This week, we will be checking out some of the biggest stars that have headlined the Coachella Valley Music Festival. Tune in on March 2nd at 1500 Universal to check out these headlining performances, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the United States, Britain and Norway are praising South Sudan for forming a unity government. Will the new government manage to end years of conflict that has killed thousands of people and displaced millions? South Sudan in transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.